acting. I won't be here next week, but he's amazing. He's my teacher and my partner. So I'll be here next week, and then the week after, that alone will continue. So I'll send out the, you know, the resource, the topics. It'll be a similar thing. It'll be things that we didn't necessarily do together. Mm-hmm. New stuff. Okay, great. So today we're going to try to see if we can finish our sequence, even though we missed a couple. But so today we'll try to finish the sequence that we set out to do. So I want to start with the following dilemma. So the true story. There's once a fellow, there's an Israeli fellow named Eitan, and he opened up a Mediterranean falafel shawarma restaurant in New York City. And so what he did was, there were the two menus. It wasn't an Israeli place, so there were two menus. One was in Hebrew, one was in English. The English menu, it said shawarma, $10. Written out in English. On the Hebrew menu, though, the Israelis looked at it. It said shawarma, $8.
I don't
know.
What did it say?
It said $8. Written out, shmone dola. It said $8. So that's how he did it. So he's getting all these Israeli customers, getting all these American customers. One day, American looked at the other one, he read the Hebrew, and said, "Hey, what's going on over here? You're charging me $200 because I'm American? That's not right. It's wrong." So Ethan says, "Nah. I just give a discount to Israelis." Right, exactly. I give a discount to Hebrew speakers. So the guy said, to me, it doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound like a kosher to me. So the question is, so there's a mitzvah not to overcharge. Is that okay? Is it okay to charge one price for an Israeli and one price for somebody who reads Hebrew and one price for another who reads English? Is that okay? You could say, well, I'm allowed to give discount to Israelis. Or you could say you're charging them extra because they don't know how to read Hebrew. Is that okay? Is that okay? Is that permitted or not permitted?
It's encouraging people to learn Hebrew.
You think it's fine then?
I don't know if it's fine.
So what do you think? What's your opinion? What's your moral antenna?
It doesn't seem right.
Why? Well, now what's the there?
Because it seems like you're fooling people. Because if it's real people, it's only $8, and if you only speak English, it's $10.
Good. Hey, what do you say?
Yeah, it's wrong. I mean, what if somebody went to a restaurant and they said, Christians $10, Jews $15? You know, people are tradition. You can't know what you are for what you have to pay or anything.
See, is he allowed to give a discount to Christians? Yeah, say the standard fare is $15, but if you're a Christian, I'll give $5 off.
You know, there was an article in the Who, What, Where, When, I think it was, where someone was complaining because they went to this place and they ordered a dozen something or others, and they didn't get a baker's discount, you know, a baker's dozen, and they were holding it against this person because they thought anybody who buys 12 should get 13 or 14. It's not so.
Okay. Fine. So David says it's forbidden. Yes, Rivka.
I mean, the way he worded doesn't sound polite, but we do it all the time. We give veterans 10% discount. So $2 difference is a 20% discount. So because we're saying Israelis versus Americans, but we give them to veterans, we give it to senior citizens, we give discounts all the time to a specific group.
But it's not a hidden discount. Everyone knows it. If you're giving a discount to veterans, it says that, and everybody knows.
Well, it could have been written in Hebrew that you get a 20% discount.
Because a veteran joined the military to protect.
I'm not saying it's right or wrong.
But that's why they give veterans. That's why they give veterans. It's a way of saying thank you for putting your life on the line, maybe for your country. But because you're a Israeli, what's the big deal that you should get a discount against an American or vice versa? Or a Christian should get a better discount than a Jew. A veteran is somebody who did something. A Jew was born that way.
I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying we give discounts to certain groups. Sometimes we give better parking spots to mothers with newborns. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but we do pull out certain groups at certain times, and whether the wording is proper or improper, or we agree or disagree, it happens. So maybe if this gentleman went about it in a different way and wrote it in a different way and didn't, you know, voice his opinion like that, again, I'm not saying I agree with him.
So
I'm not an Israeli, I would not have gotten the discount.
So what do you think? Would you do this?
For business purposes in a restaurant, I probably would not do something like that.
What's wrong with that?
It's not something wrong, I just think it would rub a lot of customers the wrong way, and therefore you'd probably put your business in jeopardy, and you're a customer-oriented business.
Okay, excellent. Sylvia, what do you think? Okay. I'm sorry for you on the spot. Okay, good. Laura?
I don't think it's right, but I mean, I think it also happens.
It happens, yeah. You see this? Okay, very good. So I think the majority say it's wrong. Let's put this question aside. Let's explain this mitzvah, and then we'll come back. So there's a mitzvah in the Torah called not doing onas mamon. So here's an example. Let's say.
What did you say it's called?
Onas mamon. Onas mamon.
Mamon.
Yeah. Onas mamon.
Translate.
But which means it means to cheat or to cheat in business. So how about this? Let's say I have a baseball card. Let's say a rookie Nolan Ryan card. You know,
that's good, huh?
Yeah, apparently it's good. Yeah, mint condition.
Yeah.
But I'm a rabbi. I don't know anything about old baseball cards. So I have this whole stack of baseball cards. And you come, you Laura, you come. It's Laura, right? Your name is Laura. I was thinking Judy or Laura. So you come, and you're an expert. You have the catalog. And you see this card. So you say, Rabbi Wiener, I'll give you $20 for this card. And I think, whoa, what an amazing price. And the truth is, though, this card is actually worth $1,000.
And I know.
I don't know. I think $20 is a good price. Totally consensual. You hide the fact that it's worth that.
That's taking advantage.
But totally consensual. Totally consensual.
Yeah.
Let's do willingly. Are you allowed? You pay. Is that okay? Is it okay for you not to say? By the way, this costs $1,000.
But you're selling.
You have to offer.
You're
you
selling
getting
it
for a
how much? You're what selling it for how much? You're selling
like
it for $20, and she knows
it's worth
$1,000.
Yeah. It's.
And that's your card.
Let's say, okay, fine, have this. Let's say you're an antique dealer, and you go to a flea market, you find an antique piece of furniture that looks like a piece of junk, but you know it's actually a rare piece of work from a famous furniture maker. And it's being sold as, you know, for $10, you know it's really worth $1,000. Are you allowed to buy it for $5? Why is it different? Why is it different?
Because I'm not trying to put anything over on them.
You're buying it, right? You're buying it.
I mean, they already have the price established.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
But so you're saying something. You're saying when you're negotiating, it's not okay. When they have a set price on the sticker, then it's okay. Is that what you're saying, Laura?
Yeah.
You're good.
I'm not sure I'm right. But
okay. What do you say, Julie? What do you say?
Well, it just, I agree because nobody should get rooked. But if you can't have a differential in price, how's anybody going to make any money?
Okay, good. Okay, excellent. So, Julie's making a great point, which is that you have to make profit, right? So, this person has a very large, very, very thick margin, a large margin. That's profit. You good? Very good. Anything else? Fine. So, onasan really means there's a market value, there's a market retail value of something, and basically, you're allowed to legitimately make a profit of 20%, without disclosing anything. But if you want to charge more, they have to have disclosure. You have to say, by the way, you should know the market price is this, and you can get this for get this somewhere else for this price. But I have to take this charge. So the halacha is what that means. If you have a margin of 20% past the retail value, you want to charge more than that. Then you have to disclose it. For example, so 20% sounds like little. So I'll give you an example. Let's say I'm a diamond. Say I sell diamonds. So often diamonds, it's hard to know how much they're worth. a diamond that looks like it's 1,000 really could be worth, you know, 100. So if I'm selling a diamond and I'm taking advantage of people's lack of knowledge of how much diamonds cost, so if the diamond is worth 100, I could charge a 20% margin. I could charge a 20% margin on that. I couldn't charge 200 for it. Unless I say, you can get this for 100 elsewhere, but I'm asking for 200. But if you want to charge more, you have to disclose it. And it also works in the reverse way. An example that I gave you. Not only does it apply to the seller, of course, it applies to the purchaser. That if you want to buy that Northern Ryan car, you want to buy that antique furniture, if you know for sure that the seller is selling it with a margin that's way below what it's really worth, you have to give disclosure. You say, by the way, you should know you can get 1,000, but I'll only give you 200 for it. You know, which wouldn't usually go. So that's the principle. That basically means we cannot take advantage of people's lack of knowledge. If someone doesn't know how much diamonds is worth, you can't take advantage of them. If someone doesn't know how much the antique is worth, you can't take advantage of that.
We can take
profit, but we have to still take them. We have to balance that by not manipulating people's lack of knowledge.
Would that hold true if you're shopping, let's say, Nordstrom's, and there's a cashmere sweater, and you know it was a reduced rack, and it's a dollar, and you know it's worth 100, because there's one next to it that's 99 or something. So what do you?
It's an excellent question. You say how about sales? Right, so I know it's permitted but the question is why. So I think the answer is. It's all about manipulating the lack of knowledge of the seller. So in the case of Nordstrom, they know it used to be the price written on it is 100, but now they reduced it because they want to sell. So there wasn't a lack of transparency. Everyone was fully transparent, and therefore not taking advantage of the knowledge. They want to sell it at a reduced rate, right? If they didn't know it was worth $100 and they're selling it for a dollar. They didn't know, then you have to say, by the way, it's worth 100. Do you really want to sell for a dollar?
Where's the responsibility of the seller?
The seller.
To not know what his item is worth.
Yeah. Responsibility of the seller.
I don't know anybody who would put something out in a flea market or to put something on Craigslist and put a price on it that didn't check out what the thing is worth. So if you're not smart enough to do that, then why should you jeopardize, why should you make it so the guy who's buying it shouldn't take advantage of your laziness not to check out what you have?
Okay, so that's the way it works in the Western world. That's the way it works. The Torah is saying we have to have a higher standard, that it's not only about making money, it's also about being God-like and honest.
So the person is not responsible for his own actions. We have to make sure that we coddle him. I mean, I didn't think they had PC back then, you know,
politically correctness. This isn't PC. You make a really, really important point, which is when people, usually on AM radio, when they bash PC, we should be careful not to bash the importance of kindness and the importance of compassion and empathy and being a loving person, you know. So, the Torah values are we have to be as the Torah values are the reason why we came into this earth is to make this world a holier place, a kinder place. We're here, as I say, Iker ha'adam ha'ol achrini. The main purpose of life is to benefit other people, benefit others. So we can benefit them by giving them more information.
So what if you buy it for $500, and then after you buy it, you find out, and you didn't know, that it's worth $1,000? You go back and offer the guy his money back?
You're saying
it's $500. Say, fine. I buy it, and all of a sudden I go over, and she says, you know, you got a good deal. That thing is worth $1,000. So what do I do? Am I obligated to come back and give you the $500? Because you didn't take the time to learn for yourself?
Right, so the Torah says in that case that if the margin was past 20, that basically then if the sale is void, and you have to return it. I'll give you an example of this. I'll give you a perfect example of this, how this actually comes up, in a practical scenario. A bride and groom were getting married, so the groom went to a jeweler to buy So he bought a ring. He wanted a white gold ring, a platinum ring. So Betsy paid whatever it was, $500 or whatever, for the platinum, whatever it costs. And it looked fun. And that's it. So he buys it, they get married, wonderful. Fine. About a couple years later, for whatever reason, they decided that the money was paid, and the wife, they agreed that they'll sell her ring, then they sell it, they'll get a cheaper ring, and use that money. So he brings the ring to assessor, says, I have this platinum ring. How much do I get for this? The price of platinum is X per ounce. So the assessor says, this isn't platinum. This is actually stainless steel. Uh-huh. Right. So he paid far more than it was really worth. So apparently he was cheap. So he was cheated. So this is a true story. So the groom was a scholar. And he knows this rule that basically he was charged, let's say $1,000 or $500 for something that was really worth $20. So that was overcharged. That was exactly, he was cheated. The rule is that it goes back. Now, when you mekadesh at a kedushin, right? When you sanctify your wife, at the kedushin, you have to own the ring. Turns out at the time that he had the ring, right, it was returned, so he didn't really own it. The sale was void, and he didn't really own it because it was. So the question brother Zilberstein, does he have to have a new wedding ceremony? He didn't need a whole fancy ring, but do they have to have aid and condition? They have to do it again, because maybe at the time that he gave her the ring, he didn't own the ring.
Why didn't he own it?
Because he was cheated. Yeah. As soon as he's cheated, right, it goes back to the seller. So when he held the ring, it really now goes to the seller because the sale was null and void.
But he didn't know he was cheated at that point.
That's true. He didn't know it, but objectively. But when someone is cheated, the sale goes null and void, and therefore it goes back to the seller.
But
basically, the sale is like canceled. So now it doesn't belong to him anymore.
So what are they going to have to do with the wedding now?
So the question is, does he have to get a new condition? Does he have to have a new wedding
because
ceremony?
Because he got a new ring?
Because he was cheated when he got the ring, and therefore at that time he didn't have an acquisition over it. He didn't own it.
Does it make a difference if he was able to bring back the ring? In other words, to the seller, admit that he overcharged it, like that had come into it.
I mean, it was. I don't know. It was clear. He thought it was fine. It was clear that he was cheated.
And also, if it was that cheap metal, it might not have been worth as many prutas.
Right. So that's a good point. So it was worth the prutas. There, it was worth the minimum. So it was worth the minimum. But it wasn't worth what he thought. And therefore, it was called bekachtos. And therefore, return. So the answer is it's okay. No problem. It's a whole discussion on why, but this is an example of this idea where when a person gets cheated, the sale is canceled and basically it reverts back to its original
value. And who determines the value of the ring?
The market.
And how does he find that out? How does he find that out?
Look,
you're a retail customer. How do you know what the market is? How do you know what the actual cost on that ring is? You don't.
We're really asking, like, you're asking that. Supply and demand means that it's worth whatever people are willing to pay for it. So how do we, if it's very rare, how do we know it's
no, but you know, when you bring up the thing of diamonds, jewelry is 300% markup, and there's a reason for that. And by what you're saying, you should actually not use diamonds, because if you've ever been to 47th Street, I have, and been in the Diamond Club, you know that this stuff doesn't always work like this. And these are Hasidic guys. And according to that, they'd all be out of business. But the thing is that I can buy a ring for $1,000. The actual value is worth $3,000. I can sell it to her for $2,000, and she's getting a good deal. But I can give it to her because I like her, whatever it is, for $1,500, I'm still making my money, but I'm making a markup. But who knows what the market is not that.
So I don't know all the answers, but basically it goes by not the wholesale value, but it goes by the retail value. So I don't know the answers in all different types of commodities.
But before you know the retail, you have to know what the wholesale is.
But in his case, he thought it was a platinum gold, but it really was sterling silver. So that's you know that sterling silver is not worth
the same.
It wasn't
sterling, he said it was stainless steel.
Stainless steel, whatever. Yeah, stainless steel. So it's not worth the same as the gold.
Well, you look on the inside and it says
14. Okay, look at that. So that's a mitzvah called an ostvar. Make sure not to overcharge. Again, it goes both on the seller and the buyer. So even though, again, this applies, you know, to with cars or with houses, this can come to a lot. You know, if the person getting I got a steal on this house, and really it was worth much less, be careful, because if it's too much of a steal, and the seller doesn't know about it, you'd be violating this mitzvah. You know?
But it doesn't apply when someone goes up in price. Like, you buy a piece of art, and then this artist becomes very famous.
Afterwards, it's a good point, yeah, sure. After the fact, it goes up, then you're right.
Most of your examples are tangible objects. How would you determine, like, a service, like a carpenter, or a painter, or a photographer? Not
excellent.
The actual, like...
Excellent point.
What they might think their time is worth versus someone else.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know the answer. I know there's a discussion about the difference between a doctor and between a contractor. I think the answer is that you have to use a going rate for a service. I don't know for sure, but that actually leads to a story. That's similar. One time in the yeshiva in Slutsk was a yeshiva in Eastern Poland. A certain student needs some help. So his father hired a tutor. The tutor was Rabbi Elazar Shach, who eventually became a big yeshiva in Israel. So he hired this person. And he hired Rabbi Shach to tutor him, and they learned together, they did well. Eventually, when the father wanted to pay him, Rabbi Shach said, I'm sorry, I can't take money. So what do you mean? I hired you tutoring him. You tutored him. He said, he did really well on his own. You know, you hired me to help him advance in his learning, and he was so bright on his own, he did it all himself. I can't take the money. It would be considered cheating. You paid me to be his tutor, but he knows it all on his own. So the father was like, Come on, take it. So they went to the yeshiva. So the yeshiva smiled. He said, "Okay, we'll see if he knows it well. We'll pick a really, really hard piece of the Talmud, and we'll see how well he's advanced." So the boy took it really seriously, and he studied really hard, and he was tested by the yeshiva. The yeshiva, and he aced it, totally knew it. And so basically, it was clear that the student was really, really good on his own. So Rashad said, okay, you see, I can't do the money. He does well on his own. That was the honesty. They had this argument over whether he should take it. That's the argument. You know, that's the honesty of honest Jews. Basically, Rabbi Shach was saying, how can I take it? I was charged to be a tutor, and he knows it well on his own. I can't take money. It will be misleading the seller. Okay. Halavai, that should be our argument.
Yeah.
Okay. So fine. So okay, let's go on. So that's the mitzvah. Now there's basically a double mitzvah, a double aveir rather, to cheat a stranger, to cheat a ger. So ger means both an immigrant as well as a convert, as we discussed in the past. So I want to show you there. Just a quick idea that I learned this past week about ger. So very interesting. The Torah says that we have to give special treatment to a ger. Ger means both a convert and an immigrant, but you generally understood to be a convert. It says why? Because you were a ger in Mitzrayim. You're ger in Mitzrayim. The question is, what's the connection? Just because you treat this male or he or she, this male or female ger, well, because you used to be ger in Mitzrayim. What's the connection between the two? So the simple meaning is that you know how it feels to be vulnerable. You were mistreated as you were strangers. So if you treat this stranger well, So Sam says the following beautiful thing. He says the word ger gets related to the word gera. Gera means like gera means the animal that chews its cud. Gera means to lift up. Basically, when the animal is chewing its cud, it keeps bringing up the food to chew again. So gera means to lift. So ger, somebody that lifts. What does that mean? So that means that ger is somebody. Every nationality has a certain collective strength. Every nation has a certain strength. And ultimately, it's supposed to use that strength somehow to make this world a holier place. Often, the nations don't use that strength in a godly way, and therefore it gets wasted. But a ger, somebody takes that strength, you know, from the nationality, comes to the Jewish people, now elevates that special national strength that they have, brings it to Hashem. So a ger is called ger. A ger is called the ger because this ger is elevating that special power and bringing that into class, so making the Jewish people a little stronger with this new strength that this nationality had. So that's the connection. It says, just as you went to Mitzrayim, why did you go to Mitzrayim? You went to Mitzrayim to be your ger. You were there, we're told. Mitzrayim was this the most advanced culture of its time. It was very corrupt, but it was very, very advanced. And we were there to elevate, take all the strengths of Mitzrayim to elevate. That's what it means, that we will leave Mitzrayim with Rechush Gadol, with great strengths. We left Mitzrayim with this enormous spiritual greatness that we were actually able to absorb in Mitzrayim. We were able to take sort of the power of Mitzrayim and use it for holy purposes. Just as you left Mitzrayim with absorbing the Rechush Gadol, the national strength of Mitzrayim, also a ger. Ger elevates that special power, therefore you must love the ger, because this ger is benefiting Klal Yisrael in a way that we never had before. So that's what to mistreat a ger also is not respecting the special strength that a ger is beautifying and enhancing Klal Yisrael. It's a very beautiful insight to the way we have to go out of our way to respect and embrace the ger. Okay, so let's move on. There's a mitzvah of the Torah. We know this. The mitzvah in the Torah says, "Do not covet." Right? Do not covet. So what does it mean? The word covet is a strange word. We don't use it all the time. What does covet mean? What does it mean? Do not covet. It's 10 commandments, right? The last one. Do not covet. What does it mean? It says, "Do not covet your neighbor's animal, your neighbor's wife, or your neighbor's house." What does that mean?
Be jealous.
Jealous. Okay. So are you saying if you are jealous of your neighbor's house, you violated the 10 commandments?
I personally know, but I think that's what it means.
It's envious
of what he's got and you don't.
Okay, good. Any other suggestions? Yes.
It means that you tried to get it from him.
Beautiful. Very good. So this is often misunderstood. Do not covet. In the Los Achmon, the Torah doesn't just mean not to be jealous. Being jealous is not a good thing. Not a good thing. It's unhealthy. It leads to negativity. It's lacking bitachon, but it isn't a Torah prohibition. The Torah prohibition on Tachmon is that the person, for example, do not covet your neighbor's wife. So it means to be jealous of your neighbor's wife, and you convince, seduce the wife to leave that man for someone else. It means you extract what you want, and you pull it out. The person has a house, you're jealous of the house, you pressure them to sell the house. So now, we would think, if I want to sell a house, if I see a house in a neighborhood that's going up, and I keep knocking, I keep offering, can I lose my house? You know, this happens in certain Jewish neighborhoods where people are always knocking on the doors. They pass the law. I don't want to see this neighborhood. They pass the law where it's forbidden to knock on the door to make an offer, because in certain neighborhoods, it's very desirable to buy a home there, and people will knock on the door. Speculators, Jewish speculators would knock on the door to purchase the property. So if you keep offering, Covet my house. And eventually they acquiesce. Because you pressured them, but you paid full top dollar, that's Los Achmon, that's Kamut. Right? You think, oh, well, I'm a good businessman. I convinced them. That's Los Achmon. That's a fascinating. So it's totally not what we think. Los Achmon means to pressure somebody to give you something that you want to pressure them. It has to be consensual. Do not pressure people. It's very similar to what we learned last week. Don't pressure people to extract something out of them. And that's Los Achmon. Okay. Let's move on. So in a related, there's a rabbinical mitzvah that being jealous, our state is saying, being jealous, kinatava and kavod, jealousy, lust, and the pursuit of fame, are three things that take us out of the world. What does that mean? So this is actually a big topic, But Rabbi Desu says the following. He says, Hashem made a beautiful world. A world of perfection and shleimus and happiness. That's the world Hashem created. Hashem created a world of perfection.